Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Maybe you haven't seen the movie Mean Girls, but you've probably heard of it. The author, Rosalind Wiseman, wrote the parenting book Queen Bees and Wannabes that inspired the movie. Wiseman, an internationally recognized parenting expert, now has turned her sights on the boys with a new book entitled Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Rules of Boy World. She joins us by phone from her home in Boulder, Colorado. Welcome to the show, Rosalind.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you're the mother of two boys yourself, yet you write in the book that you were apprehensive about writing this book as well. Tell us why.
Sure. Well, I didn't write the book, actually, because I'd had two boys myself. It definitely helped me with my own parenting once I had gone through the writing process. But I had been teaching kids, both boys and girls, for a long time, for about 20 years. And I was increasingly really worried about boys and felt like I wasn't giving them the advice that they needed. And I felt like, was I ready to do it? Could I do it? Even though I'm a teacher and I've been working with kids for so long, I really thought, well, maybe I can't do it. Maybe I just can't do this. and I really needed some, not only confidence, but I also needed a feeling of, we have got to be able to work with boys better because they are really struggling and suffering, and they don't have a language to talk about their experiences. And I knew that they were going through tough experiences. I knew it. So I decided that if I could get boys to help me write the book, that maybe I would have a shot of making it worthwhile.
You interviewed lots of boys for the book.
I did.
And I have to admit, and I think I told you this before we got started, I kind of flipped through the book and read what the boys had to say. They're all in italics or in a different typeface. How did you get them to talk?
Yeah, so that you can imagine, like, could I get boys to talk? Like,
what's your secret?
I didn't know if I could do it right. one of the most confusing things as a teacher and a parent about working with boys, and I mean, I've worked in the bullying and prevention world for a very long time, and I've worked in schools for a long time, and I know that boys can say, I'm fine, don't worry about it, when they've stubbed their toe, or they can say, I'm fine, don't worry about it, when they're dealing with some horrific bullying situation or a hazing situation, or their mom has an alcohol problem, or their heart has been broken. I mean, they're tough to get through. So what I did was I reached out to some schools around the country and said, I want to work on this project, but I need boys, not just the perfect boys that make you guys look good, but I want all different kinds of kids. And if they want to stay after they meet me for the first time, then we'll continue doing this. So I went to schools in New Orleans and to Louisville, Kentucky, and to Massachusetts, and to boarding schools and public schools and all different kinds of places. And I met with the boys, and I said, this is what I'm doing, and I need your help. And the boys were incredible. And I would go back there once every quarter, and I would meet with them and talk to them. But then what I also started doing was we started emailing pretty much every day, or texting every day, or tweeting at each other every day. And then I went to, in my usual work of going around the country and doing assemblies and presentations at schools, at the end of the presentations or any work with young people, I would say, okay, I'm writing this book. I'm trying to create this thing for boys. If you want to help me, I'd love your help. And there were kids who came up to me and said, I'm ready to do it. Or, and this is what was also incredible, is they would find me on social networking of some kind, usually Twitter, and they would say, I want to help. And pretty soon after that, we had 200 boys between 4th grade and 12th grade who were helping me all the time, not just with the content of the book, but if you know the work that I do, that I do a lot of advice and scripts of, like, here's what you say, yeah, here's what you shouldn't say, the boys would literally go through and I'd say, okay, tell me exactly at what point and in my advice to your mother or father that you would stop listening or you think is stupid or ineffective. And they would say, okay, that fourth line right there, if you tell my mom to say that, I'm going to stop listening to anything she says after that.
Would you gather some sort of a consensus on that score? Because, you know, points you make is there's so many different kinds of boys out there.
You know what, though? For the most part, that makes me laugh because there's a lot of different experiences, have a lot of different experiences, but the ways in which we annoy them are very similar.
Oh, I'm so comforted. Oh, yeah, my guess.
I never thought about it until you said it like that. It's really true. There's really a pattern of behavior that of what we do.
We do that makes them
just, you know, tune out. Yeah.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Rosalind Wiseman. She's an expert on children and parenting and is the author of the book Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Rules of Boy World. If you have a boy, if you have a question or comment for Rosalind, please join the conversation 614-292 8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So what is Boys World and the unwritten rules you refer to?
Sure. Well, I believe that if we define culture as everything we know but have never been sat down and taught about what you have to be like for people to think that they should listen to you, or that they, you know, that your voice has power, or that there are rules about what you don't want to be or else people will dismiss you, that's what culture is, like these rules, these unwritten rules. And a lot of that has a lot to do with our gender, about how we fit according to the culture as far as being a boy or being a girl. And so for all the work that I've done for all these years, it's been a lot about how the culture teaches that those people who have the most amount, who can follow those rules the best, oftentimes have the most social power. And if you don't, that you have the least social power, or you're the most vulnerable to being ostracized or alienated. Or if somebody goes after you with social power, that if you try and speak out against it, that you are going to be dismissed, people won't listen to you, or they will go after you. And that's just the basis of much of the work that I do. And so for boys, the concrete unwritten rules about that are things like, of course, about having their bodies be really hyper-masculine. And we don't often talk about body image for boys. We really usually focus on it for girls. But, I mean, honest to goodness, the pressure for boys to be and have a certain kind of body type, like having a six-pack, like when they're 5 years old, that boys know that they're supposed to have a six-pack. Well, no one ever sat down with them and said, okay, little boy, you need to have a six-pack because that's what real men have. But all boys know that. That's one of those unwritten rules that I'm talking about. And so it's also a basis, to go back to this body image stuff, for teasing them. Because one of the things that boys will do and go after, and it's one of the first things I talk about in Masterminds, is that when boys have the thing that other boys call moobs, man boobs, it's one of the things that other boys will tease that kid about relentlessly. And we would never, ever dismiss a girl talking about being teased for being fat or being overweight or anything like that. We would never do that to a 6 or 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old girl. Yet we don't even think about the boys going through experiences like that, and yet they do all the time. And in the rare times when we find out about it, we often dismiss it as like, well, that's just what boys do. So there needs to be a language for boys and a permission for boys to be able to talk about the consequences of what it's like to grow up in this culture.
How did we become so dismissive of boys?
Oh, that's a great question.
Because you do make the interesting point in contrast, and you mentioned it a second ago, the way we challenge the popular culture that objectifies girls and women, but don't do the same for boys. And I might just suggest, for example, has anyone approached you about optioning this book for a movie like Mean Girls, but about boys?
Well, those
Does
are
anyone
very
care?
Different questions. Yes, actually, the first question is yes, I have been approached. And because the Queen Bee Mom's book that I wrote after Queen Bee's is actually just about to go into production. It's been a while, but we have wonderful people lined up. And the same people who are doing that movie, it looks like we are probably going to do something with them on this. But the bigger question is, mm-hmm. how did we get to a place, and frankly the more important question, mm-hmm. is how did we get to a place where we dismiss boys' experiences? I mean, here's the thing that I think is so sort of backwards, or it seems so peculiar. We do, for good reason, think that boys and men have gender privilege, right? That they, you know, as being men, that their voice counts more in many situations. There's still a glass ceiling in some very important aspects of our culture where men have more power and privilege. That is true. it is also true that girls still have very toxic messages coming at them to hypersexualize themselves and to capitulate their personal boundaries to be able to please a man. There are still hugely strong messages coming at girls that way, and they get hurt because of those messages all the time. But for girls, there is also a counter message from a lot of different people saying, what you say matters. You know, you are more than your body. You have the right to make things better in the world. You have the right to feel passionate about your about what you believe in, things like that. I think one of the great ironies of this gender privilege for men is that it actually stops them from being able to come into their own authentically, to be able to admit weakness, to be able to admit helplessness, to be able to ask for help. One of the, those things that people usually laugh at about not asking for directions, like those soundbite-y type things that we laugh at. Is that actually those things are really deep. And as I, you know, book's been out for about a month, and having men, you know, I got one from a retired Marine yesterday who talked about just the desperate loneliness that he felt for much of his life because he was not able to talk to people about the struggles that he was having. And so within this gender stuff, and this gender privilege is a dismissal of men's real emotional experiences and their real emotional wants, and that they are absolutely, like, they are absolutely allowed to have feelings of uncertainty and of feelings of saying relationships are important to me. And then the other thing that's so peculiar is that, and this really shocked me about the for the book, is that for some reason there's a lot of men who buy into the stereotypes. And this is the thing I have to figure out, and I'm really curious about, is there's a lot of men who buy into the stereotypes of boys, where they will, even dads, who will say, all boys care about is like playing video games, eating nachos, and chasing girls. And boys just have a lot more going on than those three things. Yes, they want to do all those things, you know, or it go, you know, they're interested in sex, they're interested in eating nachos, they're interested in playing video games, but they also have deep emotional lives. One does not preclude the or exclude the other.
Ultimately, aren't the rules as the unwritten rules? Aren't they going to marginally work for someone out there?
Yes. Sure.
So it, maybe that's those dads, yeah.
Well, it depends on what you mean by work,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, so let's give a really horrible example of that. So, you know, we have this horrible experience of these boys in Missouri who've gone after, you know, this is fact, you know, this is affirmed on both sides, where they, 17-year-old boy goes after, you know, lures out two 13-year-old girls from their house, and they drink, and there is what is very much looks like, and from a 13-year-old to a 17-year-old boy, I would say that 13-year-old girls cannot have consensual sex with a 17-year-old boy. So, you know, leaves her at the doorstep frozen, you know, freezing, so her mother picks, you know, sees her then, you know, in the morning. Did that work for the boy because he was able to do what he wanted and he was able to abuse somebody? Was he able, whatever you call it, like he absolutely disrespected her? Did it work? Did it look like he was about to get away with it and he went to school without repercussion? Was she vilified? Was her family vilified? Yes. So in one definition, it worked. But does it work in terms of who you are as a person and how you can – I really, at base with all the work I've ever done with kids and worked with perpetrators a lot, is that at a certain point, most of the vast majority of perpetrators do have the realization of the cost of what it is, not just for their victims, but also for themselves, about what they are doing to themselves.
My guest is Rosalind Wiseman. She's an expert on children and parenting. She's the author of a new book. It's called Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Rules of Boy World. If you have a question or comment for Rosalind, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about boys this hour with Rosalind Wiseman. She's a parent and expert. She's also the author of a new book. It's called Masterminds and Wingmen, helping our boys cope with schoolyard power, locker room tests, girlfriends, and the new rules of boy world. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Boys are struggling a lot more if you look at the statistics, which you did. You considered learning disabilities, suicides, and prison statistics.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, here's the thing that really strikes me. We know that girls report higher incidence of depression, but boys have a 5 times higher rate of suicide. So if we look at that, what we're seeing is that boys are expressing their misery and expressing their desperation in different ways, but they are still much more feeling like that they are more that they have less options, and that they are. And I think one of the most important things about that is that they so rarely feel that they can ask for help. And it's not just about the thing I was talking about earlier about boys, you know, men not being able to ask for help because, you know, of the cultural conditioning about that. It's not just that. It's also about that we don't see asking for help as a skill. We don't see it as a capacity. One of the things I do with kids all the time is say, you know, look, everybody's going to be in a situation where you're overwhelmed at some point. Everybody is. And part of taking care of things for yourself is being able to identify when you're over your head and then strategically thinking through who is the smartest person around you who can help you with whatever problem you're having. One of the biggest things, mistakes that we've made in all of this stuff about bullying, and not every conflict that kids have is bullying, but we have consistently said to kids, go tell an adult, go tell an adult, and that go tell an adult without context. And there are adults who are terrible at being told this kind of information. They will blow it off. They will make the child feel stupid. Not all adults are great at this. So while we as adults get better at being able to see children, acknowledge children, take what they're going through seriously, I want young people to be able to as a capacity, as a skill, to be able to say, all right, well, who in my world, like maybe not every adult is, you know, a good person for me to talk to, but who is it that is opinionated but not judgmental, reliable, is going to listen to me but not freak out, and who can I really think through this problem with? And when you change that dynamic for boys, and for any men listening, if you say this to the boys in your life about asking for help is not a weakness, it is it's a skill, and you talk about that with them, you literally can save their life. And I think that's just it's an extraordinary thing for boys to feel that there is support underneath them and acknowledging that things can be really rough for them.
There are certain behaviors in school classrooms a lot of times that are discouraged, and one of them is asking for help. You laugh because you know it exactly. I mean, when there's the kid who didn't quite hear what the teacher said, raises his or her hand and says, I didn't hear what you said, and they say, what's wrong with you? Why weren't you listening? Instead of just answering their question, which is what you would do in a business meeting.
Yep. Well, remember I said a few minutes ago, while adults are getting better. And in all seriousness, I mean, one of the things that's very frustrating about my work is that, you know, when we talk to kids about all of these issues, there's an assumption that the adults, A, are not having these problems, and B, are not part of the problem for the child. And that's not what's going on a lot of times. I mean, adults are contributing to the alienation of children all the time. And it's really important for us to acknowledge that. I mean, when I work with a group of kids, or when I'm starting to, like, for example, when I was working with this with the boys and, like, how did I get these boys to, you know, get involved? I didn't say adults are terrible, and that's not the way I do it. What I say is, you know what, I acknowledge that you might have had experiences with adults that are disappointing to you. And what I want to know better is how we can reach you and how we can be able to be more credible to you, because we have to acknowledge that not just that there is hypocrisy, that kids are seeing adults act in hypocritical ways sort of in the public view, right, of like, you know, people on TV or politicians, but also exactly what you just described, where the teacher in a room says something disrespectful to a kid, and even on the walls of that classroom is a big poster that says, you know, we're a caring community, here are 7 pillars, respect, no question is stupid, you know, all of those things, and yet you get exactly that kind of comment. Not all teachers, of course, are like that, but it doesn't take many experiences for that to happen. for all kids, for kids to think, I'm not asking a question, I'm not asking for help because the person's going to ridicule me.
I want to get to a few calls, but first I thought we could go through a little bit what you mean by masterminds and wingmen.
Sure.
The title of the book.
Sure. All right. Well, like queen bees, I did what I do is I try and define group dynamics and put words to things that I think people know, they just haven't put the words. So that the goal is that when you read it, you think, oh my gosh, I can totally picture this. Now, this is not the case for everybody, but that's what I try and do is try and put words to things that we just haven't put words to yet. So in Queen Bees, I wrote about understanding girls' positions and their roles. And with boys, when I went to the boys and said, you know, should we put this in the book? They said, absolutely, we should put this in the book. Of course we should. We have our own role. We absolutely have our own roles. So it took about a year of debating, and you were asking me about debating earlier and arguing. I mean, this is where we argued and argued about what the roles would be and how we would define them for adults so they could see it, and for other boys as well. So it's a starting place for discussion to understand different roles that people have. And you're not stuck in a particular role necessarily for your entire life, but it's a way of just understanding your own behavior and understanding other people's behavior so that you have a better able to predict what's going to happen. And so masterminds are the boys who control the group's movement. So I want you to think about like the guy who decides what video game the boys are going to play when they're sitting around on a couch, or because I know that sounds silly, but that's actually a big power play in boys' world. When they're, you know, middle school, you're sitting around in a lunch table. Whoever decides who's going to get up and the meal is over, that's the mastermind. So it's the person who directs the group's movements. And the wingman is actually not necessarily within the group. He's the guy that backs up the other boy when he is, like, you know, trying to get with the girl, which just shows you when I first started working in this, I thought a wingman was more about, like, what the traditional definition of it is, which is, you know, the person has your back no matter what. And the boys said to me very politely, no, you're completely wrong about that. Actually, wingman is only used in our world for when we want to try and hook up with a girl and we want our buddy to help us.
Michelle in Westerville, you're on the air with Rosalind Wiseman. Welcome.
Thank you. So, Rosalind, my question for you is you talked about how the further you get from the expected gender roles for boys and for girls, the less social power you have. And I guess my question is then, without becoming the stereotype, the He-Man or the six-pack or whatever, how does one increase social power?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a social power where people, in my mind, there's two different kinds of social power. And I was referring to the social power where in some ways people fear you or specifically do not want to confront you because they're afraid of the social fallout. I think that, I mean, a lot of my work is being about how these gender roles can really confine you and really stop you from being able to make authentic decisions and to be able to – that you get so focused on maintaining your social power and the appearance of conforming to this look that you forget yourself in the process. And it can also create tremendous amounts of, like, almost chaos and anxiety in a person. And in some ways it's good if you have a lot of anxiety about it because you're realizing that there's a discrepancy about what you feel and what you are presenting to the world. And so social power like that actually has a lot of cost to it. And kids who are able to understand and people, who are able to get to the place where they are not so consumed and so codified and so regimented by these rules that they're much more able to be comfortable with themselves, at peace with themselves, and as a result have much better, stronger relationships with people that are not so based on these power dynamics. So the social power definition of like people fearing you or not wanting to confront you really damages authenticity of relationships. The social power that people actually like you because you are inclusive and because you make it better to be around them, that is the social power that I'm trying to direct kids to not only be able to see the difference between the two, but to be able to come into their own wherever they are in the social status or wherever they are in their the way they present their gender, that they are able to look at that social power and claim that and try and because you always people want to feel included and they want to feel good about being a part of their community. And so that is where that's the goal. And so that's how I separate it between the two.
Thank you, Michelle. Ida in Dublin,
yes.
You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. I have a son that's much older now, but I remember when he was growing up and just being very frustrated that it seemed like the education system seemed to be more geared towards girls and their fine motor skills, being able to sit down and concentrate, versus boys that were gross motor and wanted to get up and move around. And this wasn't even the ADD type thing. This was just typical boy. And I'm wondering if our school systems are starting to realize that boys learn differently, and is there any way that that's being addressed?
Sure. Well, boy, can I relate to you? I remember even when my child was really young, I remember going to a music class with my three-year-old, and he was the only boy, and he would not sit still. There were all these drums, I remember. And here's the thing that I think is one of the problems of that, especially that there's many. But, you know, sitting there as a mom of this is my first child, and I remember thinking, like, what is wrong with my kid? Why can't he sit down like all the other kids? And you know, I do this stuff for a living. I've been doing it when he was two. And I remember feeling so badly that – and, like, there was something wrong with him, that he was, you know, going around the room and wanting to hit the drums, and he would not sit in my lap and sing those songs that all of the girls were singing in their mother's laps. And then that shame, I think, or that sense of failure transfers from the mom as the boys gets older or the dad to the child of, like, you can't make it here. And, of course, so then why would we ever be surprised that boys don't want to be in school, right? I mean, it's just – it's an extraordinary thing of, again, not self-reflecting on what we do that contributes to the problem. And, by the way, I think boys – I mean, I'm a girl, obviously, and I didn't like sitting in my seat the entire time that I was at school. But in answer to your question, I think that there are programs and there are schools who really are getting it. And one of the more interesting places where this is happening – is in all boys schools. I think that there is a similar thing that's happening in all boys schools that happened in all girls schools about 20 years ago, where those all girls schools realized that they needed to, these weren't going to be just like fancy all girls schools, these needed to really cater to the ways in which girls learned most girls learned the best. So there's an international coalition of all boys schools that has done remarkable publications on working with boys. And some of these schools are these very traditional, been around for a couple hundred years schools that are really understanding and changing the way that they do their work to be more reflective of what boys need. And so what we need to do is get those people who specialize in boys and know boys the best to be able to share the wealth of information that they have with the rest of the educational community.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you, Ida, for that question. Sometimes it can be as simple as with they say, fill out this worksheet and then you get to color it in. Well, that was a disincentive for a certain boy I know. I actually said to the teacher, why don't you just give him a little bag of Legos and say, when you finish out the worksheet, then you can put some Legos together any way you want. But they never do.
Absolutely. I mean, it took me as a mom of my two boys that when my older son would get incredibly angry when he was, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, and to be able to put him in his room and to realize that actually putting Legos together calmed him down and got his brain basically working again, right? So he could have... So he could rejoin the family. we don't often think about that, and it's just incredibly important.
Joe in Groveport, you are on the air with Rosalind Wiseman. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, really enjoying the show this morning.
Thanks.
I think you know, boys get sort of a mixed not sort of they do they get a mixed message today that maybe 30, 40 years ago they didn't get. I think, you know, boys and girls are so different. You know, young boys, teenagers, that get all that testosterone running through their veins, and some of their behavior is attributable to that, I believe. And we've told boys over the last probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years that they need to share their feelings and not always act out on them. But I think the mixed message is that's good, that if they can do that, but it also appears weak. And I think it appears that way not only to other boys of their age, it appears that way to society in general, generally speaking, not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really tough for boys. We don't want to over-feminize them, but at the same time, they have to be more than just brutes. So there's a fine line there.
Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, I just think there's a fine line there. I can give you a real quick example. My wife and I are both 46 years old, and occasionally I will overshare fatal aches with her, and I can see her fading. It's I think, especially the women of, like, you know, my generation and even older, they want men to be men and strong, and they don't. They might tell you they want to, you know, my husband doesn't talk to me, but if he does enough, she's like, okay, that's enough. Get back to being a man. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm 44, so, you know, pretty close to your age. I mean, I feel strongly that men have the right to have their feelings and to articulate them in respectful ways. I mean, I think that, you know, that where your dignity is upheld and the dignity of the other person is upheld. Dignity meaning to be worthwhile. And I don't, you know, for both boys and girls, for men and women, I don't think that you can say life is not fair, but I think that every person has the right to be able to have their emotional truth and to be able to speak that and not to have somebody dismiss it or to think that because you are X, you don't have the right to express that or have those feelings. And I honestly, I mean, if we look at, and I can't tell you how many letters I've gotten from men doing, after I've been doing these presentations for the book tour, where they are talking about, in some ways, a lot of what you've referred to. And I want to go back to, you know, we can, and boys can, be encouraged to share their feelings or to be given permission that they have the right to have their feelings, without doing it in a way that feels like we are feminizing them. And that's not what this is. It's about girls, however girls want to express their femininity, that if as long as they treat themselves and others with dignity, then that's cool. And that's the same with boys and with men. And to be able to say to people that, you know, that you have the right to the way you feel, and as long as you don't treat somebody else in a way that degrades them or humiliates them or dismisses them, then that's what you get. And it's one of the things that we should inherently get. Now, the world is filled with people taking advantage of that or silencing people. We don't live in an ideal world. We live in a concrete world. So what this is about, and what my work has always been about, is that we've got to be able to have a bedrock of understanding that dignity is not negotiable for people, but we also have to teach people how to be socially competent, how to be able to take the feelings that they have in their gut that might be really uncomfortable and put them to words for themselves so that they have the best chance of not only verifying for themselves, I have this right to do this, but also that this is about the social contract of how we talk to each other and how we treat each other, which is really the basis for the emotional health of our communities.
Joe, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. We have a few more calls to get to, and we will when we return. My guest is Rosalind Wiseman. She's the author of Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Rules of Boy World. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Rosalind Wiseman. She's the author of the New York Times bestselling Queen Bees and Wannabes. It was the inspiration for the book Mean Girls. She's written a new book. It's called Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Rules of Boy World. We have an email from Amy, Rosalind. She says, my fourth grade son was bullied this year for the second time in his school career. The first was in first grade. What is the best way to handle the situation? Should I intervene or should I encourage him to advocate for himself so that he builds the self-confidence to stand up for himself? These are very, very tricky questions, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And without knowing too many specifics, I think that what I can say to you is that, to this mom, is that when you have a fourth grader, he does need to be able to at least articulate for himself what is specifically happening that he doesn't like. And that might seem extremely obvious, but the ways in which, we'll just, for you know, young people, the ways in which young people can go after each other can be so common that the kid can get to a place where they think, well, that's just what everybody's doing, or that's just, it's just what this is. And it's really important as the parent to say, just because it's common doesn't make it right. So, and that's an important thing that, you know, to remember for the rest of your life. So have the child take those bad feelings and put them to words for himself, and he can write it down. If he doesn't feel comfortable writing it down, he can say it. You can write it down. So he says exactly what he doesn't like, exactly what he wants, and if he is friends with this kid, because lots of times the bullies can be the friends, he needs to go, he actually, the parent needs to ask him, like, do you want to be friends with this kid? Do you want to take a break, a vacation, or do you want to, like, put a hard line, like, I'm not going to be friends, which might seem so weird to people because they think, well, I'm being bullied by, like, kids being bullied by their friend just stop the friendship. But lots of us have really dysfunctional relationships with people who treat us badly, and we stay in the relationship. So it's really easy for us sometimes from the outside to make it seems easier, right, than when you're actually in it. And then because it's at school, I would suggest that one time if your child feels physically safe to do this, to try his best ability to take what you prepared and to say it to the child who's bothering him without the expectation that this kid's going to say, oh my gosh, you're so right, I'm going to stop doing this, right? Because that's not the expectation, it's not a realistic expectation. Remember, I said we work in concrete reality, and concrete reality is that when you tell bullies that you don't like what they're doing, they don't thank you for it. What you're trying to do is to be able to articulate what's happening to you and to be able to say it in a way that is taken seriously. And then if that doesn't work, if the behavior doesn't change, if the behavior gets worse, then the parent needs to get more actively involved. So they're always involved. It's just that lots of times what we want is for the parent to be behind the scenes. And then if there's a pattern of behavior, then the parent needs to, because especially this is at school, this is a group dynamic, that then they need to figure out, well, who is the person at school that is the most professionally appropriate and, frankly, also the most competent, because sometimes those things are not the same, of who to go to and who to speak to. And just the last thing, because I can't talk about this for a long time, is when you go and have that meeting, don't send a big email in all capitals being all crazy. Just say, I need to meet with you when and where. And when you go into that meeting, have what your kid said, show it to the administrator or to the teacher, and then say to them, what is the safety plan here and what can I expect? And I would like for you to get back to me within 36 hours or 24 hours and tell me how things are going, and then we'll check in. And the last thing is that you cannot demand, though, to know what is the punishment of the bully, because the teacher or the administrator professionally, that's a breach of confidentiality to be able to say that. And you don't really want to focus on the perpetrator's punishment. You want to focus on getting your kid safe.
There are a lot of scripts in your book for these sorts of things.
Yes, there are.
And I really appreciate that. Let's take a call from Charles in Columbus, because I think what Charles is bringing up is something you talk about in terms of how boys are relating to girls academically. Charles,
oh, sure.
You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. My question was that, did you in your research see anything about peer pressure among boys about acting less smart than they already would display? Like,
yes, absolutely.
Which is something we usually hear about girls.
Right, right.
Yeah, well, what about boys?
Yeah, Charles, it's a great, great question, and I do write about this. And I actually have the boys talk about it. More importantly, I have the boys talk about it. So, this really depends on the culture of the school, there, you know, and the leadership of the adults in the school, of saying, because what I've seen is that an outside community where the school is located can have a culture that says you can't be smart, and in different kinds of ways. For example, there are communities that I go into where you can't seem like if you start to succeed academically, that looks like you're arrogant, and so you should be put down, or you shouldn't do that, and that dumbs down the kid. In other communities, overall communities, especially in places where you're not allowed, if you start to look like you're being academic, then you get this charge or accusation of acting white, which of course has so many different complicated problems alongside it, that also dumbs down, or the appearance of dumbing down, the kids that are within it. Within the schools, if the leadership of the school can counteract that, there are some amazing things that can happen in that school, and it can powerfully counteract that huge cultural pressure for the boys to pretend that they don't care about doing well. So what the boys said to me is, and this is again all throughout the country, is that they said to me that it was better to be to be the best among mediocre than to put themselves in situations where they truly would be challenged. And I remember one kid, I think I'm paraphrasing, but I remember him saying he went to a small school in Maine, and he was one of five. He said to me, I was always one of five boys that took the advanced placement classes. There was only five boys who would do it, and the rest were girls. And this is a kid who played basketball. He was pretty popular. He was, you know, a socially fluid kid. And I was like, why? Like, what's going on with that? And he said, because my friends are morons. They would rather be mediocre. They don't want to challenge themselves with the girls. They don't want to be seen as losing to the girls. And what this really is, and this again is about cultural stuff, about risk, is that we have to get boys to a place where they feel that it is okay to take the risk to be wrong, and then to be able to get up and stand up and try again. Instead of the sort of culturally condoned risks, for example, I'm going to give you an extreme of like where a guy says to another kid, all right, jump off the basketball bleachers and see if you can land on that table like you saw in some wrestling thing that, you know, last weekend. You can talk about hormones, you can talk about risk, you can talk about brain development and all that kind of stuff, but there's also a part of that, which is the boys saying, this risk I can do because my boys will support it. This risk of trying really, really hard in school and actually articulating that I feel that I want to do well in school and admitting it, that's too risky for me. So I'm trying. Part of this book is about helping adults be able to change that paradigm for the boys.
All right, Charles, thank you so much for that question. I want to turn to... maybe a related question. David in Columbus, you're on the air with Rosalind Wiseman. Welcome, David.
Thank you for taking my call. As a man who's grown up on three continents and then settling in the United States, I've noticed that the increasingly multicultural society that we have and the different definitions of masculinity that come with it create that challenge for raising boys, especially if you're, you know, especially if you're in a multiracial relationship, for example, you're looking at not just one definition of masculinity or one expectation of masculinity. You're not just saying, you know, you don't necessarily control that as much as you would, mm-hmm. You know, traditionally in a, say, you know, as you could 20, 30 years ago. You're talking about, you know, grandparents and mm-hmm. parents mm-hmm. And friends and parents of friends defining what it means to be a man. As well as with the advent of technology, basically, it's very hard to control that definition. And, you know, maybe it's easier when you're a toddler or a preteen, but once that person has access to the World Wide Web, everyone from your friend to Tucker Max tells you what it means to be a man and what it means to be a, you know, a big, strong
okay.
man.
Rosalind Wiseman?
Yeah, sure.
What do you make
of that? Well, what I think is that, like, so Tucker Max is an author who is an extremely entertaining, funny writer who is incredibly self-deprecating, and it's his way of being able to say incredibly racist, homophobic, you know, sexist kinds of stuff. And I've actually, as I've read his books, you know, and I've read them, laugh. You know, there are things that are really funny, and he's a great writer. And he's really self-deprecating. He's great at being able to put him to describe like the most embarrassing moments, and he, you know, that there's nothing he won't, no humiliating experience he will not share with you. For the book, we actually had a lot of boys from Brazil who helped us with this, and had some other boys from the UK who helped. And so certainly not in any way a broad swatch of the infinite numbers of ways in which people identify themselves today. But it was interesting to watch the boys debate with each other about how these things were impacting them in their own countries. I would say, I mean, one of the things that was, I'll give you one slice of it, though, is that with the Brazilians, when they talked about who could play soccer and who could not, and who had the right to establish rules in the informal group, and who had the right to be able to say, like, a redo, for example, those power dynamics came very fast up to the fore, and that was really interesting. And to talk to the boys about that was really it was really compelling. So I would say that, you know, I think one of the things that brings us all together, no matter what culture we're from, is that we want a sense of belonging. We want to be able to contribute to something that's more than ourselves. We want to be able to work towards something that we have curiosity about, we're interested in. And that we have a strong feeling of social connection. If I repeated myself, please excuse me. And if we have those things, regardless of where we come from, I think that's like one of the most incredible things that bonds us together, is that we have those things, that we're good, we feel good. But the problem is that conflict is inevitable and abuse of power is inevitable. And being able to face that is really what this is about. And as, you know, an educator of boys and of girls, what's important to me is to be able to – they are really in situations where abuse of power is coming at them. And at least in this country, I can speak with some authority about that they are not getting from many of the public leaders in their life. And I don't mean the people like politicians. I mean that, like, we'll just take a coach. A coach, regardless of what country you're in, a coach for a child is a transformational, incredibly important person in their life. It can be somebody who, if they have a horrible family situation and their coach is an upstanding man who is strong and confident and athletic and, you know, goodness knows, can fix cars and do all sorts of things that are like super macho, but is also really focused on relationships are important to me. You are important to me. My charge, my responsibility is to care for you. Yes, to be a great athlete, but my relationships are important. The way I conduct myself respectfully with dignity is important. That person is transformational to that kid, no matter how difficult their home life is. It is also true that the coaches who walk into a locker room and know that there is hazing going on and throw some jerseys at the kids and walk out the door knowing that those older boys are going after those freshman kids, those younger kids, at that moment for boys is transformational in a way where they say, I cannot trust adults. They absolutely are people that will allow injustice to occur. Those are the moments that I think are important that we have to look on.
All right. Thanks for that call. You know, you write about the 10 percenters at the top of the social scale and whether or not they're necessarily any happier. And you've mentioned that there's a lot to maintain when you're at that level. But you also make the point about the kids on the lower rung, so to speak, that they're not as miserable necessarily as their parents often think.
No, they're not. I mean, you know, we have this stereotype of like the kids up in the top are the most happy and the kids at the social, lower pecking order are the most miserable. That's really not the case. The kids at the top can often be incredibly miserable, and they can be miserable. They also can be miserable to other people, but they can feel horrible themselves. They just present well. They unfortunately can be really good at sort of hiding their misery. And oftentimes, God forbid, you know, when those kids hurt themselves or by drinking or drugging or killing themselves, and then there's this constant thing of like, oh my gosh, this kid had everything. Why did he do this? He was miserable and couldn't ask for help. Kids on the lower social rung oftentimes feel pretty good about their friendships and, you know, feel like these are my friends. I trust them. Like, I feel good about where I am. Before we end, because yeah. I can see our time, is that
yes, it is.
Not only did I do masterminds for parents, but I also did a book for boys themselves
That's right.
And for girls, and it's called The Guide. And please excuse my language about the subtitle. but it's for high school boys. It's not for adults. You can read it if you want, but it's not for you. It's called The Guide, Managing Douchebags, Recruiting Wingmen, and Attracting Who You Want. And we also have a school version called The Guide, Managing Jerks, Recruiting Wingmen, and Attracting Who You Want. And it's the complement to the Masterminds book, and you can get it for free on any e-reader platform like Amazon or Nook or anything.
We'll put a link on our website.
Okay, thanks. And it's just for boys that if they're having a problem, they can look at it, and it has basically problem, solution. And I did it with the same editors who helped me with Mastermind.
Rosalind Wiseman, thanks so much for joining us today. Lots to talk about. We really appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Rosalind Wiseman, she's the author of Masterminds and Wingmen, Helping Our Boys Cope with Schoolyard Power, Locker Room Tests, Girlfriends, and the New Rules of Boy World. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.